Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, welcome everyone. I'm excited for today's episode. We interviewed provider attorney Bob Molenweg, who is one of our estate provider attorneys in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know, a lot of the interviewees we've had on this show have been family law and immigration providers, so we wanted to get someone that can give some advice on fielding estate leads and also from the perspective of having 37 years of practicing experience as well. And that's what this episode turned out to be. So he covers a lot of things from working with clients on an unbundled basis, hour by hour giving advice, to the full representation options. He also does fixed fees and talks about some of the best practices for determining what those fixed fees would be and how to handle that within the initial consultation. We also talk about him enrolling a lot of his clients right over the phone without them having to come into the office and how to feel out whether that's a possibility. He talks about kind of old school clients versus new school being just younger generation, familiar with texting and working with things electronically, and versus the old school clients that are just going to be more comfortable working with you in person. And finally, we also talk about the emotional components of doing estate law and how to be sensitive to that and to work with folks in a way that is respectful to that and can help them make these transitions and help them handle these issues in a way that honors the profession and honors their unique circumstances. So it's a really great episode with an attorney that's been practicing for many, many years and focuses on this area of law. So let's get right into it. This interview with Bob Molenweg, one of our provider attorneys out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. All right, Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to join.
Yeah, really glad that we're getting a chance to chat with you, and it's right after the new year, so it's a refresher and a good time to take a look at what's worked well and what are the areas that we can all improve on. And I really appreciate you the opportunity to speak with you specifically because you're one of our estate planning lawyers. The majority of the interviewees we've had on the show have been family law and immigration, so really looking forward to diving in and talking to you more about the estate leads and the process you developed in order to contact and develop those into paying clients. So I appreciate you taking the time to share your insights today.
Sure. Happy to.
Yeah. So maybe, Bob, just so folks can get to know you a little better, is share a little bit about your background and, you know, how you got a start in the practice of law, or at least the region. I was some time ago, but feel free to share, you know, your little bit of your background, who you are, and the types of region you service and the focus of your practice.
Sure. So I've been practicing for 36 years, which is frankly a pretty long time. I'm in a four-person firm. Our firm primarily focuses on business, labor law matters, both in terms of litigation as well as transactional work. On the business side, a chunk of what we do is estate planning and probate. And the estate planning includes both individual family planning as well as business financial planning as part of those services. Primarily, the estate planning focus of our practice is on, you know, families who need to have basic estate planning documents, whether they be wills, powers of attorney and medical directives, or for others, you know, revocable trust agreements as well. And then on the probate side, we're in New Mexico. In New Mexico, we have a statutory probate code. We have two general types of probate. One is called an informal probate, which is really an uncontested proceeding where, you know, there are certain filings you need to make to get a personal representative appointed so that they have authority to take action to, you know, handle the estate assets and make distributions and handle claims of creditors and so forth. We also have a formal probate procedure, which really is a contested probate procedure where there may be a question about the validity of a will, or you have different folks who have equal priority for appointment of personal representative who neither one wants to let the other person do it. So we apply to the court to assist in getting someone appointed. So those are the general areas that we do. With respect to unbundled, we've been getting both estate planning and probate referrals. And so that's been the work we've been doing, and we've been involved with unbundled since last April.
That's right. Yep. And that was right when we were just ramping up estate leads for the first time. So the volume has been, you know, consistently gradually growing up. But maybe you can talk a little bit about, you shared a few numbers on just what your conversion rate has been. We could talk about the types of cases you've been attracting, and then maybe dive into a little bit of your process you developed to achieve the results.
Certainly. So since April, we've received 22 leads from unbundled attorney. And of those leads, we've converted 8 into actual client relationships. Those have been, I think 5 of those have been estate planning leads, where we've provided various aspects of estate planning services, and 3 of those have been probate matters. With respect to the probate matters, at this juncture, they've fallen into really 3 categories. One category is a probate that unfortunately is a contested probate. And for that matter, we initially were retained by the son of a woman who had died. He was the named personal representative under her will. Initially, it appeared that it would be an uncontested probate. That is, in fact, how we initiated the probate proceeding. Unfortunately, after that was done, it turned into a contested probate proceeding with regard to the primary asset of the estate, which is a house. And there was a conflicting claim to the house by the boyfriend of the decedent. And in that particular case, we had quoted a standard fixed fee for doing the uncontested probate, and then that converted into an hourly rate in terms of dealing with the contested matters. And that one just recently, we were able to settle and reach a resolution. The length of that was about 6 months to work its way through the court system and get to a mediation, and, you know, ultimately got to a satisfactory resolution for the client, the son of the decedent. Another probate matter we have really is a pure uncontested probate where, again, the primary asset is a house. House was in the decedent's name, and in New Mexico, in order to transfer title, need to have a probate in order to get that moving. That one is still in process, but we're going through the notice period. For example, in New Mexico, when you have a probate, you need to provide notice to creditors. And there's a catch-all way of giving notice through publication, because in many cases, you don't necessarily know who the creditors are. And in order to avoid creditor claims that might pop up down the road, you publish notice, and then under our statutes, they have a 4-month period within which to assert their claims. And you really can't start making distributions to beneficiaries or transferring estate assets until the creditor period has expired. In the third probate matter that we've handled, it has been more of an informal advice on a hour-by-hour charge to an individual who is a beneficiary in the estate but is not necessarily getting along with the actual named personal representative in the estate. And so we're assisting that person, really giving them guidance about the probate proceedings, the type of information that they're entitled to receive from the personal representative, how the distribution process is supposed to work, and that sort of thing.
And how do you determine in the process of working with these clients whether it's going, I mean, obviously, if someone's going to, you know, needs to file an informal probate proceeding or formal probate proceeding, or, you know, so they, you know, they're going to need someone to go to court with them, or at least guide them on that. How have you been able to determine? So that's pretty straightforward and, you know, obvious, that, you know, of what the services need to be provided at that stage. For anything up to that, how do you determine, you know, how to structure the amount of service that you're providing to someone, whether it be an hour by hour advice, whether it's just giving guidance, whether you're preparing documents for them or not. I mean, it sounds like you've been kind of tailoring that to the specific needs of the client based on where they're at in the process and delivering those services accordingly. So can you talk a little bit about how you structure that and how do you come to that determination?
Sure. So in connection with an informal probate, there's a list of the required documents that need to be prepared in order to move an informal probate through to completion. There's a petition for appointment of the informal personal representative. There's a notice to beneficiaries that needs to be given. There are letters testamentary which need to be issued by the court. There is the notice to creditors which needs to be prepared, mailed out to known creditors in some situations, published for all other creditors. So there's a series of documents that we know are required in connection with an informal probate proceeding. And for that, we have arrived at a standard fee that we charge for that, assuming that it's not going to turn into either a contested formal proceeding, or if there's, you know, a fight that develops down the road between the personal representative, who is usually the client who has engaged us, and some of the beneficiaries. Or in a different situation, there might be a fight with creditors where a creditor is asserting a claim which upon investigation doesn't appear to be warranted, and that ends up being, in essence, a mini trial within the probate proceeding. So we have standard fees and fixed fees which we charge for uncontested matters, and we advise the clients at the beginning, if it doesn't appear that there's going to be contested matters, that the fixed fee will cover the basic informal probate proceeding. We let them know that if there are creditor claim challenges or there are disputes with beneficiaries or there is a challenge to either the appointment of the personal representative or of the will itself, that those will need to be addressed on an hourly fee basis. We let them know what our hourly rates are. We can give them in some situations an estimate of what the fees would be, but it's kind of a dual engagement. So they know what they're getting for the fixed fee, and they know that if we go outside those parameters, those additional services are going to be provided on an hourly basis.
Right. Then you have that in the agreement. So there's clarity there. And then also you mentioned that there are some clients that are just coming in that you're giving some guidance to. I know you were talking about the probate cases you receive, but you also had some folks that were coming in and just getting advice and guidance on how to address the issues. Can you talk about how that has, you know, worked out so far and why you feel that that's been a beneficial way to approach it for some cases?
Sure. So for some people, they're not needing to have a lawyer involved to actually handle the probate proceeding. And it could be that either they feel confident of handling it themselves, except for some of the more technical issues, or in the one case that I mentioned earlier, we're representing a beneficiary, not the personal representative, and providing advice on an as-requested basis to the beneficiary about the probate process. So in that particular situation, after we ascertained the beneficiary's position, we asked and frankly offered several options for them, and they were, fairly well-educated individual, able to, read documents, understand things, and what they were really seeking was professional advice about the process, in general, as well as advice on particular issues that might come up. And for that, we quoted them an hourly rate and gave them an estimate of what it would take, for example, to go through the basics of an informal probate proceeding, the types of information that they're entitled to receive, how long the process should generally take, what questions they're entitled to ask of the personal representative, what financial information they're entitled to. And so we had an initial meeting with an hour of time allocated to that, and then they have called us periodically as the process has continued, asking about particular things. And for that, we again charge hourly for, you know, a telephone call, or in one instance, they asked us to, you know, help them write a letter requesting information. Again, that was done on an hourly basis.
Yeah. And this is where the, you know, the unbundled crossroads of estate planning comes into play, where, you know, you're really, you know, again, unbundling the scope of the practice down to providing limited advice, guidance, and allowing the client the freedom to handle some parts on their own, or to proceed in the case with just your guidance. And do you find that that is appreciated by the clients? Do you find that that's beneficial to them, obviously from a cost savings standpoint, but also just being able to know that they have someone in their corner to walk them through the process as they go through it?
Yeah, I think a lot of clients do appreciate that, because in some of the estates or probates that we're dealing with, there really isn't a lot of money involved. There might be a house that's worth, you know, $150,000, $200,000, but until that house is sold, there aren't funds available. Some of the beneficiaries are, you know, they're not wealthy people, and certainly legal fees, even on, you know, a limited basis, can be a rather significant expense for those folks. And so I do think that particularly for people who are, you know, relatively well-educated, they might be college graduates, they might be, you know, an accountant, they might be involved as an engineer, but they're just not familiar with the legal process. Having someone they can go to and get general advice as to how that works, what the expectations are, what the time frames are, I think is very helpful for them. And they know that it's only going to cost them to the extent that they ask for that advice.
Right. And so there's a certain degree of security, or just knowledge, knowing that, hey, you know, they can decide for themselves if they're in a position or a crossroads where they really need the guidance to get to the next phase of their case. And then it's available for them. And, you know, they can do it on an hour by hour basis. Like you said, when there's limited assets involved and, you know, there isn't a whole lot, maybe as finances on the line, of financial assets on the line, or, you know, maybe they don't have access to them until, you know, the estate is, you know, properly resolved. That must be really helpful for folks that don't have those that financial ability to still get the guidance they need to get through the process.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about just the process you've been using to field the leads. You know, obviously you haven't worked family law or immigration leads in the past, so can't really draw a comparison per se to that. But maybe you can just talk about, you know, how are you currently receiving the leads? Obviously, you know, they're coming in through email. Who makes the initial contact? And do you call the leads yourself, or do you have a secretary? And then how does that initial call get set up?
So I have handled a few of the calls, but I've got an associate who's done a fair amount of estate planning and probate work, and I feed most of those calls to him. And he and I have discussed, and we've agreed upon, you know, the general topics that need to be gone through. It's a different list if we're talking about an estate planning referral than a probate referral, but it's a matter of finding out, and we try to peg it to a 15-minute conversation. We're not always successful, but that's what we try to do for that initial call. And we figure that's a long enough period of time. If we structure the conversation and get into the particular needs that the client is bringing to us, to outline for them what their options are and whether it's something we can help them with or not. And so most of the time, for example, if it's an estate planning issue, we find out if they have an estate plan already. Do they have wills? Do they have any familiarity with what documentation is generally needed? Are they looking for estate planning for themselves? In some situations, we'll get a call from a child who's looking to have some estate planning done for the parent. So we try to figure out within that 15-minute period, you know, is this something we can help them with? What is the scope of the services they're looking for? And for many people, they're wanting to get a general idea of what it's going to cost. And so we hadn't talked previously about estate planning, but we have some standard fees that we charge for certain types of estate planning. If it's an individual, for example, who is wanting a relatively simple will, a durable power of attorney, and a medical directive, we've got a fee that we will quote them to handle that work. If it is a husband and wife, and they want to get basically wills, powers of attorney, and medical directives for both of them, we've got a fee that's more expensive in order to handle that. Or if it's someone looking for an inter vivos trust, which generally involves a trust, a pour over will, or wills if it's a couple, for example, powers of attorney and medical directives, we've got a fee for that. And we try to, get that number out in front of the client at the beginning so that they know what they're looking at and whether they're willing to spend the money or not. There have been some referrals where we've gotten to the point of talking about what they need. We've quoted them the fee, and they decide that they don't want to move forward with it at this time. There's a couple that are out there that we frankly expect at some point will come back and initiate the process down the road. We've had several who, interestingly, they've gotten that number. They've gone out and, tried to find somebody else to see if they can get it at a less expensive price. And they've come back to it because we frankly offer a pretty competitive price for the fixed fee type of work. We also make clear in the estate planning area, if they cooperate with us and provide us accurate, timely information, and this is important, don't change their minds, then we can get through the process very efficiently, and it's a win-win deal for us and for them. We have had a couple, in fact, we've got one right now, where the individual is a bit indecisive. They have a very large extended family. They're trying to figure out what percentages to give to the different people, whether to have strings attached to some of the gifts. That substantially increases the amount of our work because we're no longer talking about a standard document. We're talking about one that's going to have, rather lengthy dispositive provisions, and they're changing over time. So we have to be clear in our engagement in letting the client know what it is we're giving them for the fixed fee, and if they're wanting to go beyond that, that it's going to be charged an additional fee, generally based upon our hourly rate.
Right. And Bob, there may be some attorneys that are newer to estate planning or considering transitioning over into offering estate planning or even taking estate planning leads, for example, or just have been doing it for some time and might be curious. Would you mind sharing whatever you feel open to share about the typical fixed fees you might quote? Obviously every case is a little bit different based on what they need, but simple wills, couples, and just to give attorneys a context around what you quote, at least in the Albuquerque market, for these various different fixed fees. And then we can also maybe, circle back on what you talked about as far as, setting the right client expectations as well.
I don't want to give specific numbers, but I could say for, if you're talking about simple wills, again, with the powers of attorney and the medical directives, and this also involves, a certain amount of consultation time with the client, making sure that they have a good understanding of how their assets are held, for example, their house, how is title held if they own a house, their insurance policies, their financial accounts. We quote a fee that's below $1,000 for that. If it's a husband and wife and they're looking to do an inter vivos trust and it's not overly complicated, the fees that we're quoting are between $1,000 and $2,000.
Right. And, you've been doing this, you have an incredible amount of experience working within this realm, and you also have an associate, obviously, that works closely with it as well. Are there any pitfalls? I mean, you mentioned setting some expectations when the client is indecisive about, how they want to see their assets distributed or the percentages, or if they want to get complicated about the way those distributions are going to be handled, especially, like you said, when you have bigger families and maybe multiple beneficiaries. Can you talk about maybe some of the common pitfalls that you've maybe learned from or overcome over the years in that conversation to make sure that, especially when you're dealing with a fixed fee, for example, how to set the appropriate expectation when you have these types of factors that could influence the amount of time involved with being able to service their needs.
Well, I don't know that there's a perfect solution to that, because there are certainly situations where you don't know upfront how extensive their gifting concept is. Try to, you know, clarify upfront in the initial conversation, how many children do they have? Do they have others to whom they intend to provide gifts? Are they planning to make charitable contributions to different entities, either the church or an educational institution? And so we try to gather a sense of how extensive their gifting is at the beginning, and that will dictate, to some extent, the fixed fee that we'll quote them. We do, in the initial conversation, make clear that in order for us to be able to do this efficiently, we need them to provide us with complete information, and we can give them some options about the types of gifts people can make. It could be a percentage of their estate. It could be a percentage of the proceeds that might be received from the sale of a major asset. It could be a fixed dollar amount. We talk about the strings that might be attached to it, for example, setting up testamentary trusts for beneficiaries who might be below a particular age. So we do talk about that up front. If somebody has a very extensive family, or they express that they're really trying to figure out, you know, how they want to provide for these gifts, we have an estate planning questionnaire, which we typically send to our estate planning clients, typically send it by email, and we ask them to fill it out. And it has, as well, a number of questions that they are asked, not just about, you know, their background, where they have assets, who their children are, who other beneficiaries are. But it gives them an opportunity to express what their desires are in terms of gifting. And in those situations, if they're pretty good about completing them and getting back, then we've got a pretty good roadmap to proceed forward with. But there are those situations, again, we've had several where they've been indecisive, or they originally thought they were wanted to do X, and then they changed their mind and they wanted to do Y. And on those, you know, we've made it clear in the engagement that we're going to be charging them a little more money. But in some of those situations, frankly, we're giving people a break over the additional time that it's taking us, because we think that's what we need to do, because in some of these situations, they're not wealthy people and they really couldn't afford the full hourly rate that it takes to get the job done. So that's just one of the risks that you take when you get some of these clients.
Yeah, and that's the obvious concern for any attorney that is offering a fixed fee on any level is, you know, the concern that, you know, they're going to offer a fixed fee and then it's going to take a lot longer than they expected. One of the things that attorneys do with family law is they'll do it kind of one task at a time, unbundle it to, you know, or they'll do the limited scope, you know, document preparation, and they might do a limited appearance and kind of do one step at a time and be very clear about each phase of the process so that, you know, they can deliver parts of it. But when it comes to estate planning, the fixed fees, it sounds like the quote you're giving or you may lead to be needing to give is a wholesome service quote. In other words, like it's the whole, what it takes to get the whole thing done. And so that's where you have, you know, a little bit more of that balance of trying to figure out and trying to, you know, isolate and get down to, okay, how's this really going to go? So you can start to figure out what that fixed fee is. Do you find that, you know, on that initial call, you're usually able to, by asking some of the questions you've talked about, I mean, we can talk a little bit more about some of those questions, that you're able to very, very accurately give them an actual fixed fee amount? Or do you find you give them a range and then have them come in the office and then you kind of give them the exact amount? How do you find that balance between obviously wanting to give people a straightforward price on what they can expect it to cost, and at the other side, be it still being just that initial phone consultation and may need, and you might need more information information in order to be able to give them an accurate expectation and not wanting to misquote, for example,
You know, in some of these, it's pretty easy to figure out what they're looking for and to give an actual fixed fee quote at the time of the initial conversation. There are those situations, again, in the estate planning context, where it's not clear whether they need, it might be a husband and wife, they might just need wills versus going with a living trust. And so in that situation, we would quote a range and then get that pinned down at the time they completed and brought in the estate planning questionnaire so that we had a better sense of whether, you know, a trust made more sense for them or not. You know, in some of the calls, it's clear that they don't need a full estate plan. They don't need a will. They don't need a power of attorney and a medical directive. They might need just something to help transfer a particular asset. So, for example, we have a statutory provision in New Mexico which allows for real estate to have to be transferred via a transfer on death deed. We've done several of those for people. You know, we get a call from a child of an elderly person who owns a house, and they want to make sure that the house goes to, you know, two or three of the kids or one kid, whatever. And in the initial discussion, it's clear that transfer on death deed is the simplest and least expensive way to do that. And we'll quote them a fixed fee to do just that. It requires that they give us the conveyancing deed into the mom so that we know that she, in fact, is entitled. And then we can prepare the deed and either handle the recording of that deed ourselves for an additional fee or give it to them to take down to the county clerk to handle recording themselves. In other situations, they might just be needing, you know, a durable power of attorney. We've had one, for example, where a family member was going in for major surgery and they didn't have anybody who would be in a position to take action on their behalf if something came up and they were incapacitated for a period of time. So we quoted a fee for just doing a durable power of attorney for a limited period to cover that. So we do unbundle a little bit in the estate planning context, and we try to figure out up front if that's something that makes sense for the person. And obviously it ends up being less expensive for them if they're looking for a limited solution instead of a complete estate planning solution.
Right, exactly. So let's talk about just estate planning and doing these more of complete estate plans. I heard earlier on that you also do, you know, financial planning, and you know, you take more, it sounds like more of a holistic approach to looking at, you know, planning for their estate, but also protecting their estate. Can you talk a little bit about the financial component, planning aspect, and how that plays itself into your estate practice in working with these clients that are, you know, planning for the future and in death, and also for their families?
Well, and let me clarify, we're not financial planners. For some clients, it's clear that they need to have an expert in financial planning matters consult with them. Some people have financial planners. We've had a couple of clients who've come in for the estate planning who have, you know, a fairly sizable estate that's invested in various things, but they don't have an actual financial planner. And so we've got several folks that we can recommend to them, or we can, you know, suggest that they go talk to any brokers that they might know. We try to be careful not providing just limited individual referrals. We try to give people at least two or three if we're going to make that recommendation. And we make very clear to people if we're making that recommendation that these are people we've worked with before, we're confident of their abilities, but they need to make their own decision and they need to be comfortable with that person. What we do as part of estate planning, though, that involves business planning is a number of our clients in the firm are owners of closely held businesses. And so dealing with their business succession plan generally also involves dealing with their personal estate planning. And so that is an area that we do a lot with, where a person who's owned a business, it could be very successful, but they're the sole owner, and they, you know, want to figure out how to exit the business and get paid off for doing that. And in some situations, they might have children who are involved in the business. They might have younger partners in the business. And so dealing with their business succession planning, generally in those situations, also involves dealing with their personal estate planning. They kind of go hand in hand, because with many small business owners, certainly in New Mexico, a substantial portion of their total net worth is tied up in their business. And so handling that necessarily involves dealing with their personal financial plan and personal estate plan as well.
Okay, great. I appreciate your insights on that. And so getting back to a little bit on fielding the leads, again, you mentioned that you have an associate that's doing some of the calls. You've done some of the calls. So really, it's not, the phase is when the lead comes in, you guys will call them to set up the initial consultation. Do you typically do it right then and there if they're available and do that 15-minute evaluation? And then from there, the next phase is, you know, at that point, you've given them either a fixed fee quote, you know, and isolated some of the issues or potential concerns you may have to determine, you know, roughly what the scope of, you know, the amount of service you may need to provide them. You've given them either a fixed fee or a range of fees. The next step is for them to come in for a consultation, or is it for them to come in and pay for the execution of those documents? Is it one phase at a time, or do you do it, you know, all at once? What's that next step that the client or the lead is then taking to engage your office after that 15-minute call?
So ideally, we try to have the first 15-minute consultation at the time of the first call and try to make a determination and reach an agreement that they're either going to engage us or they're not. If we get them to agree to engage us, typically we will then have an email address for them. In many of the referrals, we get that along with the telephone number from the prospective client. And we will email them an engagement letter that will confirm the scope of the engagement, the fee terms under which it's provided. And what we do with most new clients, we give them an option, but we have a credit card authorization, and it has certain parameters that they can specify in terms of amount and when the card can be charged and that sort of thing. And we ask for either a retainer or a credit card authorization up to an agreed upon amount at the time of that engagement. So if it is done smoothly, after that 15-minute conversation, engagement letter is prepared, it's sent out, the client will sign it, return it together with either a retainer or their credit card authorization, and now we're moving forward performing the work. In some situations, the 15-minute call doesn't result in a decision about whether they're going to retain us or not. They want to think about it. They might want to bring documentation in so that we can further explore, you know, what their situation is, what they actually are going to need in order for us to be able to give them a reasonable quotation and for them to be comfortable engaging us or not. Some of our engagements never involve a direct personal contact with the individual. If somebody, for example, is wanting a transfer on death deed, they may provide us by email the information on the property, how it's currently titled, and they request us to prepare the deed and email it back, and they'll handle it from there. So that is an option for some people. Most of the time, there is a personal meeting at some point, generally up front. In some of the, certainly in the estate planning context, if we're doing the complete estate plan, need to make sure that the estate planning documents are executed in the proper fashion with disinterested witnesses and notary public, and that's part of the service that we provide as that package. In probate matters, again, if it's just general advice, we may be able to do that just by phone, by responding to email inquiries. Many times, though, a lot of clients do want to have that personal interaction, so there will be at least a meeting at some point so that they can, you know, put a face to the voice and feel comfortable that this person is, on our end, is handling their matters the way they would like.
Well, I'll tell you, Bob, I feel comfortable hearing your voice, so I'm not sure I would even need to do that. But there is this, you know, kind of attorneys are trying to find that balance with internet leads on when to try to have the, you know, when would be the types of scenarios or the types of clients or circumstances in which you could complete an enrollment with the client essentially right over the phone, which it sounds like, I don't know if that's the majority of the clients or just some of the clients, you know, that's been the case for you. You've been able to have clients where you do the initial consultation, you send out, you know, electronic engagement agreement, they sign that, they do a credit card authorization, and it's all done over the phone. And some of the clients you may never meet, or some of them you may meet at a later date. So it sounds like there's, you know, many clients that you've been able to, you know, essentially enroll over the phone without having to come in the initial appointment. You know, other times, you know, attorneys have, you know, found with internet leads, because they haven't, you know, heard of the firm before, or, you know, aren't familiar with, you know, the brand, or don't have an established relationship through referral through someone else or something, that, you know, have given the client the opportunity to come in the office and meet them and see the office and build some of that relationship of trust has been a critical component of them being able to effectively convert their leads into paying clients. And so for you, have you found that the majority has been over the phone, or do you feel that some clients really do need to come in the office to make that determination? And how do you feel that out to figure out if that personal contact is what might be missing for them to, or what might be needed for them to make that, to take that next step and feel comfortable retaining you?
So I think it depends on the comfort level that you can ascertain from that initial conversation. And I kind of liken it into two basic groups. There's old school and new school. And certainly for older people, and frankly, I put myself in that category, a lot of people are old school, and that personal touch is part of what they want to have before they're willing to commit to an engagement with a professional. And that's understandable. And we generally get that feel during that conversation. For a lot of the younger folks that we deal with, it's not as necessary. They're more accustomed to dealing with other people online, whether it's on the phone, whether it's texting, whether it's by email. That's the way they've grown up, and they're more comfortable with it. The other thing we tell all of the folks online or on the phone at the time of the initial consultation is we've got a website, and they can look us up on there. It shows our firm. It talks about our philosophy. It shows what our offices look like. It shows what we look like. And unlike some people who touch up their pictures, we don't. And so it allows them to see that we are for real. I think it's comforting to them that our firm has been around for, gosh, since 1993. So we're going on 24 years as a firm. And so I think that also gives them, you know, a sense of comfort that we're not just a brand new firm that hasn't been around and knows what they're doing. But that personal touch is important, more so for some people than others. And you just have to gauge it by, you know, the interaction on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. And it certainly just comes from experience and getting to know, you know, different kinds of folks and what's going to help them feel more comfortable. And certainly you can ask them, of course, would you want to come in, or do you want to just, you know, engage over the phone, or do you want me to send an email contract? I mean, certainly that's a good way to determine as well, just to ask them. But I guess one of the last things I wanted to ask you about, you know, you've been doing this, you know, you have, again, a lot of experience, you know, doing estate planning for many, many years. One of the things that, you know, I certainly appreciate or notice about the way in which you communicate is it's very relaxed, it's calm. People feel, you know, inevitably I would think are going to be very comfortable. That's also been my experience and my background. The calmer I am and the more relaxed and you know, paced I am in the way I communicate with them, the more they can relax and not feel like they're being rushed, you know, and they got to make a decision. There's very low pressure. I know it's sometimes challenging to analyze yourself in that way, but have you found that that's always been your demeanor, or do you make an attempt to try to be more relaxed, calm, and relaxed and relate to people in that way, especially with estate planning, because sometimes there isn't the time factor and the urgency like maybe family law would have, such that you can kind of sit back in your chair and just have more of a relaxed conversation as opposed to, you know, okay, are you ready to make this decision? You know, more of an urgent type of communication style?
You know, that's a good question. I think, you know, part of it depends on the individual lawyer's personality. I'm generally a fairly low-key person. I get aggressive when I need to be, but I tend to be relatively calm because life's too short. You don't need to be getting upset about things unless you really are pushed into a position where you have to. When clients are coming to a lawyer, in an estate planning context, it's usually not an adversarial situation. But it's an important issue for many people. They put off estate planning. I mean, that's just a fact. All of us don't like to think about the fact that eventually we're going to die. And so estate planning is a recognition that that is going to happen at some time. And so it needs to be a comforting conversation. And it can't be rushed. You know, some of these people, frankly, have been thinking about estate planning for years. And so trying to give them the bum's rush and get them to commit to it in a 15-minute conversation, they may not appreciate it. And I think you would tend to lose people if you push that hard. That's not to say that you shouldn't try to push them to making a commitment and making a decision, because A, it's eating up your time, which is taking away time that you can spend pursuing other leads or doing other work. But it's also helping them, you know, by the mere fact that they've reached out, that they've sought a referral to get to a lawyer to talk about estate planning, tells me that they're ready to move forward. They might just need a little extra pushing, and it's helpful to do that in a way where they are going to feel comfortable. In a probate context, somewhat different situation, somebody already has died.
Right.
It could be, you know, a close family member, typically it is. It's a trying time anyway, and if you're not going to be comforting with them, I mean, that is part of the service. I mean, yes, you're going to get them through the legal process of a probate, but you also need to help them get through the grieving process. I mean, we're not, you know, mental health counselors, but part of what we do involves that. And we need to recognize that if we're going to provide good service.
And has there been anything on that, in that context, that you've done over the years to become a better support, you know, not only in your communication for people that are considering estate planning, because that's obviously, like you said, a very sensitive subject. Like you said, many times people thought, you know, most people thought about it for years. Eventually, they're going to need to do that. And now they're finally taking the action. You got to kind of nudge them to move forward, but also do it in a comforting way. But also, you know, helping folks that, you know, have lost, you know, a loved one or a family member, and help them deal with that. I don't know if it would be books or training or any resources you could mention for attorneys that do estate planning that could be helpful in that effect, that has served you over the years to explore.
You know, I don't know that there's only so much you can do when you're reading books or going to a seminar.
Right.
You know, part of it is you have to go through the experience. Both of my parents passed away. I was the personal representative in both of their estates. My wife's dad passed away a few years ago. I handled the family's affairs with that. I've handled the estates of a number of long-term clients who passed away over time, and I had developed relationships with their family members, which is why I handled their probates. And You don't have a real appreciation for what people go through until you've been through it yourself. I wish you could read a book and figure it out, but you really can't. And so I think, you know, one of the ways I think that people can get there in terms of really understanding that is, you know, trying to, if you're in a firm where there's older lawyers and they've been doing it a while and they've been down this road, you know, try to, you know, work with them on some of these and go through that experience so that you can really get an appreciation for what the emotional process is for the family, because it is difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in my own personal opinion, I think it's one of the most noble, you know, to be able to take someone through this process and do it in a way that's respectful and helps the family members resolve these things in a respectful, with the least amount of conflict possible, and is a really noble profession. you know, it's shepherding people through one of the most difficult times of their life. And, you know, legal, certainly, you know, dealing with the legal aspects of it is going to be complicated and stressful no matter what. And so your ability to empathize with that and take them through that process in a way that acknowledges that and does it in a way that helps them feel more comfortable and process through that with the least amount of pain and struggle as possible is a really, really valuable service you're providing to these folks and their families. So I certainly appreciate what you're doing and what Allstate Lawyers are doing. That's why we certainly one of the reasons why we, you know, generate estate leads and are involved in this realm. And so I really appreciate your perspective on it and obviously your experience and taking the time today to share insights on how you work with these folks.
Sure. Happy to do it.
Okay. So thanks again. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this interview. So for everyone else that's listening, we certainly appreciate your participation in the podcast. Hope this episode was useful for you estate lawyers out there that are learning how to field these leads and also work with these clients in the best way possible. And if you're enjoying the podcast, go head over to iTunes, leave us a review. We really appreciate the feedback and it supports the show. So with that, we thank everyone for listening and we'll see you all on the next episode. Thanks so much. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.